Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be looking at key market themes as well as a number of UK equities. And on the podcast, we have us once more to go through these key themes, Alan Green. Alan, thank you much for being with us today.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, we're looking at a FTSE 100 this morning, which is slightly softer. It's been a softer week for London's leading index, although that it is after, you know, a couple of weeks of strong gains in that index. Of course, you know, we saw lows around 7,000. We did go up and touch 7,500 on the FTSE 100. So, you know, you put that into context, we are quite a bit higher than where we have been in recent weeks. But Alan, when we're looking at these markets, particularly this week, we've got Jackson Hole that's coming up at the end of this week. That's obviously the summit of central bankers, and people are going to be watching in particular Jerome Powell and his comments on the trajectory of interest rates in the United States. Now, of course, this year there's been a number of quite sharp interest rate hikes. You know, you're looking at, you know, figures that we haven't seen for many, many years. I mean, is there the potential, Alan, if we're looking at this backdrop now of, you know, potentially softer economic conditions with increased input prices for businesses, that's obviously following through into households and, you know, looking at the cost of living crisis, there are many predictions out there that we're going to be seeing a recession in the US, possibly here in the UK. That's something we've touched on the podcast previously. But if we sort of detach the economy from the markets for one moment, and we sort of look at how the markets have set up going into this meeting, do you think there's a potential here for Jerome Powell to really sort of change his stance from being quite hawkish and talking about increases in interest rates to one to say, well, actually, no, if things start to soften in the US economy, we could actually pull back on interest rates, maybe slow the pace and maybe hint, and I don't think it's going to happen this year, but maybe hint at possible interest rate cuts in the not too distant future?
Yeah, I think that's very likely. And let's not forget, you know, the USA has always been out there as the leading economy in the world, and has, you know, very much dictated the fortunes of other markets. The old saying, the Dow sneezes, we catch a cold, has never rang more true than it has today. And certainly it has an equal effect on other markets too. So I think the US have been fairly protectionist and haven't really acted so much with regard to other markets. And although they may, you know, many in the government there may say, well, you know, we've got to get our own house in order first of all, I think they have a responsibility to the wider global economy. So I'm sure when the bankers meet at Jackson Hole this week, that will be something that they have to consider, because of course, if they can show the way forward, if as you say, Jerome Powell does take a slightly more dovish stance on the actions they're going to take going forward, so there's the prospect of maybe we're seeing interest rates topping out for the moment, despite of course predictions of inflation increasing, then it may be that there'll be some relief in other quarters, and we'll see the markets continue to push higher. And of course, that could well sort of feed into new jobs, and certain areas of the economy seeing benefits going forward. But certainly, we're in the summer lull as well. We're in the middle of August, and I think although we can speculate an awful lot at the moment, when everything restarts again, mid-September, that's when I would expect to see some decisive action. I think at the moment, a lot of the a lot of the governments or many governments around the world are just looking to see how this plays out, because of course it is, whether we like it or not, the inflation crisis is being driven by Russia's energy prices. And of course they have absolute control over that at the moment, and it will take us many, many decades to wean ourselves off the Russian gas supply. So until we can resolve that, we're very much hostages to fortune.
Indeed. I think there's a very, very interesting point that you picked up there, the distinction between government action and central bank action, because, you know, as you said there as well, you know, this is a crisis that's been manufactured by the conflict started by Russia over in Ukraine. I mean, if you're looking at electricity prices here in Europe, you know, there's, you know, looking at all the major economies in Europe, electricity prices are above 600 euros per kilowatt hour.
Yeah.
Now, that is in comparison to before 2020, you're looking at a range of about sort of 40 to 50 euros. So that, you know, this is a crisis that's being, in terms of the inflation crisis, it's being driven by the supply side. And, you know, central banks increasing interest rates have absolutely no impact on that at all. Mm. You know, they can control the demand side. Yeah. But really, it's a job for government. And I think that the question is that we'll finish off on the economic side here, Alan. Looks like Liz Truss is coming in. If we're looking here just in the UK, I mean, do you think that she's up and sort of looking at her plans, that she's got anything in, you know, up her sleeve to control the supply side and bring down the cost of electricity for people here, and obviously the cost of power?
Well, I think, as I've said previously, John, during the COVID crisis, Rishi Sunak put together a very good furlough scheme, and this is a different sort of crisis, but it's a cost of living crisis, and the government have a vast array of tools available at their disposal to be able to help households struggling with these sort of cost increases. So I've no doubt there will be some concessions, and I think that's probably why Rishi Sunak has in effect priced himself out of the job, because he's looking at it from a formulaic perspective, which is the right way to do in some ways, but it doesn't sell. It doesn't sell a solution to the crisis for the vast majority of the electorate. And I think what Liz Truss is doing is promising help, promising to look at interest rates. And although that is the call of the Bank of England, you know, she and her cabinet can bring pressure in certain ways to the bank to devise a strategy to tackle it. So I think hers is going to be the more popular administration, and I'm sure she will have when the final presentations take place in early September, I'm sure she will lay out a list of measures that she will take if she's elected as party leader, and thereby becomes the incumbent prime minister.
Yeah, she's the odds-on favourite at the moment, and I can't see anything changing that. As you said there, Alan, you know, these leadership contests are more about you know, what you can sell into the party members, as opposed to, you know, the realities afterwards. So watch with interest going forward. So now, Alan, let's move on to the first stock that we're going to discuss today. One looking at the chart here, complete bloodbath. It's Cineworld. You know, this is a company that was one that was hit very heavily by the pandemic. We of course saw a good gain in the shares since, but I think there was an element of investors thinking, right, everyone's going to go back to the cinema, and Cineworld are going to be fine, and forgetting the massive debt pile that they had from the acquisition of the US business. I mean, looking at it, Alan, what's your views on Cineworld, given where we are now?
It's very sad, isn't it? And the absolute irony to me is I'm just on the Cineworld plc.com webpage, which says the best place to watch a movie, and you've got a completely empty cinema theater in front of you, which I think absolutely covers the challenges that they face right now. Of course, they've just completed the acquisition of Regal Entertainment Group, so it's now the second largest cinema business in the world by number of screens, operating UK, Ireland, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, Israel, and of course the USA. And you've got within the group Picture House, Yes Planet, Cinema City, Regal. I've just mentioned, of course, the Cineworld brands. But it faced a perfect storm with COVID. And I think, despite the fact that a lot of the major titles like the new Top Gun movie and other films were delayed, they've not attracted the viewers back that they'd hoped to do, simply because there's this lingering fear of COVID, the new variants emerging. Then, of course, we've got this monkeypox thing flying around, and I think people, you know, whilst they're happy to go out and maybe sit outside a pub and go shopping to a point, they're not happy to go and sit in an environment where they could potentially potentially catch a new variant of COVID. So I think if Cineworld is going to survive, and at this moment it looks very unlikely, I think it's got to kind of tackle this. I think it's got to meet it head on and just say to people, you know, say to potential viewers, come and see us. We have these, we have a package where you can sit. We have filtered air. We have this. We have that. We have masks that we hand out when you walk in, and all the rest of it. And you know, we all loved going to the cinema. You know, it's a great place to go and watch a movie. And indeed, we still go. So I'm quite happy to sort of go and take that risk. But of course, I understand that others aren't. And I think you've got to. Changing that mindset is the biggest problem the company, or the biggest challenge, is the biggest challenge the company's going to face. And we've seen the shares collapse from the year high of 85p to they're currently trading 2.7p today. So it doesn't look good. You've got all the major investment funds dumping their holdings. Polaris Group dropped or dumped their holding today and offloaded a load of stocks. I'm reminded of Thomas Cook a few years ago, where I took a punt because I believed the brand name would survive, and of course, ultimately, it didn't. Although, during the time in the run up to the company finally going into administration, there were some great opportunities to trade, and the stock becomes a trading opportunity. So, what you could maybe do, the stock right now is only for the brave. Believe me, it really is. But it's got all these assets around the world. It's currently got a market cap of 38 million and a big debt pile, and it's not attracting people into the cinema. But if something changes, or if there's a development, you could see the share price go zinging back up to, I don't know, 5p, 10p, and there's an opportunity to trade. So that's where I see Cineworld right now. It's a real shame for the group, because I think you know, it's sad to see the cinema industry in this parlous state at the moment. But I think it's going to be many years, really, before the fear of COVID recedes enough to attract the audiences back that it once did.
Yes, I mean, obviously the pandemic has been, the cause of these issues. But, you know, people not going back, and they've obviously pointed to a slow slate of new films and blockbusters coming through in the summer is really causing some problems. But I mean, even before this, I mean, there are some real red flags with Cineworld. I mean, if you're looking at the total equity of a business that's been running in excess of 10 years, being at minus 345 million, and its goodwill is around 5 billion, and that goodwill is obviously from acquisitions, which can be impaired going forward. You know, major red flags there. But as you said, Alan, you know, they're talking about filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in the United States. There may be some interest there in breaking the group up, and, you know, that there could be some value. You know, obviously looking at some of the, you know, the property there. But, you know, really, it's it's a tough situation. As you said, this is a gamble more than anything at this point in time, and it's a sad situation to see a company which was ambitious. So I remember when I was a broker some years ago, and they were going through the deal, they did a placing that was well in excess of their market cap. They were really going for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we didn't have the pandemic, I'm sure that they would have been fine. They could have been paying down the debt. But, you know, this is a real casualty from COVID-19. And unfortunately, as you outlined there, we haven't seen that business pick back up again. So what happens in the coming weeks, I feel, with Cineworld is anyone's guess. But as you said, if we see any positivity, you could see some volatility to the upside.
I think the challenges they've got too is if some of the properties could be sold on to property developers, that's fine. But of course, a cinema is a particular type of establishment, isn't it? It's a particular shape and size of building. So unless you knock it down and start again, it's very hard to develop into something else that could work in the current environment. So that's the challenge they face, because a lot of businesses that have huge overheads and huge property portfolios can sometimes move those portfolios on if it's a buoyant property market. But when you've got the challenges, when you've got a purpose-built establishments that Cineworld have, it's very hard to then change the purpose and turn them into something else. You've literally got to knock it down and start again.
Yes. And I mean, another problem here, just looking at the balance sheet as of the end of last year, I mean, they had property worth 1.6, 1.7 billion, but that stacks up against loans and borrowings of 5 billion. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, yeah. it doesn't even cover that.
No.
Which is, it might buy them some time if they're able to manufacture that. But then they're obviously, you know, if it goes into any use apart from cinemas, then, you know, that knocks down their revenue if they're selling it off like that. So a tricky situation. And one I feel I don't have, any certainty in what's going to be happening with them in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
So, Alan, now let's move on to something a little bit more positive. Tech Capital. Investment company operating a number of portfolio companies, a number of portfolio companies in technologies really that have the potential to provide a positive impact on a large number of people. They've got some that are unlisted, some that have listed, and one of those have listed just recently. It's a smart eyewear brand, Lucid, Alan. That went on the NASDAQ last Monday. How did that perform for them, and what's the latest from Tech Capital?
Well, it was a very, very sort of strong IPO, got away, but as often happens, post IPO, you'll see investors involved in the IPO sell their shares or sell down their holdings, and there's a warrant package with it as well. Of course, the warrants trade separately. So a lot of investors will probably take the decision to take some money off the table, i.e. sell the shares and hold on to the warrants going forward. So I think Lucid has fallen since its IPO, understandably. The actual underlying business itself is very strong indeed. And indeed, you've probably seen the interview that I conducted with Clifford Gross, the chief executive, last week, discussing that, just the innovation behind it. You know, it's the first company ever to deliver prescription glasses with Bluetooth technology included. So, Clifford was saying he's a big fan of the technology. It's got so many applications. You know, we have smart watches now. Smart glasses are very much the next big thing. So they're right on the cusp of this huge growth market. So the early sell-off I think we've seen in Lucid shares is simply investors involved in the IPO just taking some money off the table and hanging on to the warrants for the upcoming ride. So, but of course, it's not just about Lucid. You know, Tech Capital itself is a global IP investment group focused on transferring university technology into valuable products to improve everyday lives. And of course, when I interviewed Clifford, we were talking from Sussex Innovation Centre, which is a very similar environment. It spins out technology from the university and commercializes that tech into the into the commercial sector. And certainly, the company has had a very strong run over the past year. 6 months results announced at the end of last month, a couple of weeks ago, showed a net asset value increase of 13% to $77 million, just under. Net asset value per share up 6% to 51 cents. And the portfolio valuation grew 16% to 74 million. And of course, post the Lucid IPO, they still hold 71% of stock in Lucid. And I know Clifford is very bullish about the future of Lucid. But of course, there are four other companies that the company are engaged with. Clifford spoke about Guidant, which is engaged in the new autonomous vehicle market. And of course, you've got these autonomous vehicles that will be driving on our roads very soon. And they've got to be monitored. They've got to be monitored and controlled from remote monitoring stations. And the Guidant offering is the best in the business. And it was something Clifford explained, that it was something like a very few microseconds. So when the signal was received from the monitoring station to the vehicle, it took microseconds literally for that command to be executed. So it's the leading technology in that business at the moment. Then, of course, they have they've got 100% investment in Guidant. They own 100% of company. Then there's Microsalt, of which they own 97%. Microsalt is reduced salt for snacks. And of course, salt and sodium are in snack foods are one of the key factors in obesity and hardening the arteries. So what Microsalt does, it produces salt granules, which still taste very strong, but they're much smaller. So the actual particles are much smaller. So you need far fewer of them to get the same taste in a snack. So it's again, the simplest ideas are the best ones, aren't they? And this is such a simple idea, but a really innovative way to change perception in that market. And of course, that will contribute to an improvement in health for people that that love snacks. And then, of course, they have 15% in Belloscura PLC, which is an AIM traded medical device company, which develops portable oxygen generators for COPD sufferers, and again, the leading device in the world. So the company's had a really, really strong run over the past year. The share price, has taken a little dip in the past few days, and that will be on the back of course, the sell-off on the Lucid IPO. But looking at the steps forward that the company has taken, indeed, the broker SB Angel announced a buy rating for the company last week with a 49 pence price target, and they SB Angel said they continue to see significant upside to the current valuation of each of Tech Capital's portfolio companies. And based on the valuation of the portfolio companies combined, they have a minimum value, not a target price, a minimum current value for Tech Capital of 49p per share. So you know, whilst the shares are down at this level, post the Lucid IPO, I would say fully boost. You know, they're looking great value.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, sort of looking at where shares have been, of course, it's been a bit of a dip since the Lucid IPO, which I would add, you know, in this environment, getting an IPO away, that's to be commended. So,
yeah, very much so.
You know, although it's, you know, it's dipped slightly, to actually get one done and, you know, raise those funds in this environment is a positive. But if we look back to the beginning of July, you know, we're looking at Tech Capital shares beneath 20p. So, you know, at 28p at the moment, of course, we had a strong rally in anticipation of the IPO. It's a bit of a buy the rumour, sell the facts. But as you've outlined there, Alan, there's a number of other companies which have, exciting operations going on. Some of those are going to be IPOing, I understand, in the not too distant future. And, you know, looking at ones like Microsalt, for example, really playing into, you know, bigger themes out there. If you're looking at the FDA over in the United States, one of their big targets is sodium and salt, yeah. And, you know, the illnesses that it causes. So, you know, this product's coming along just at the right time. Mm. So I'm sure one that we'll update on the podcast again as we hear more from them. So now, Alan, we're going to finish off with Greatland Gold, one we've discussed on the podcast previously, and one that I'm always scratching my head with, Alan. We're looking at shares in Greatland at the moment. Let's pull it up here. Live price currently 9.5p, down 2%.
Just off the year low of 9p.
Yes, just off the year low. And if you put it on a year to date, you know, down 37% over the last 52 weeks, down 44%. And this is all in the face of what's been a strong stream of positive news, Alan. So what's happening here?
Well, of course, Greatland Gold, they discovered the iconic Havieran gold mine, which has captured the imagination of investors around the world. And I think more than anything, encapsulates why we love investing and why people will and investors will invest into small mining companies with a great story, because you know dreams do come true, and certainly came true for Greatland Gold with the Havieran discovery, and of course after that discovery. Shares, as we know, rocketed. From the company's worth some 25 million at the time, and shares rocketed all the way up, and they were they achieved a valuation of some one and a half billion at the peak, and they're now currently trading at 9.5p, giving the company a market cap of 400 million. And of course, with the work that's been done at Havieran, Greatland Gold is very much a multi-asset company, so Havieran is the flagship asset. They joint ventured with Newcrest Mining. Of course, Newcrest is one of the Australian mining giants, and they've come in. Newcrest had an option to purchase an additional 5% in the joint venture from Greatland at $60 million, which they chose not to do. And Sean Day is delighted that, given the progress that's occurred at Havieran over the past year, that they've elected not to do so. And the reason for that is that the mineral resource estimate for Havieran has been upped yet again. This was announced, of course, late last week. Greatland retains 30% ownership of Havieran. Mineral new resource upgraded by Newcrest to 6.5 million ounces of gold or gold equivalent. At the same time, the decline rate has advanced, and of course, this is the mine decline where the access to the mine is being built, which in itself is a huge undertaking, and that has accelerated. But it's also evolved at a time where the anomaly representing the original Havieran asset has been discovered. And of course, they've found additional anomalies or new lines of interpretation under the ground that show that there's an additional resource there. And of course, Newcrest has gone through the process with Greatland and has established this new mineral resource estimate. So that's great news. And of course, where we are at the moment, we've got all this uncertainty in the world. Gold is a safe haven asset. And certainly going forward, to be invested into gold and for Greatland to retain this stake, I think is a very fortuitous, but also it's a very savvy move by Sean Day and the team to do that. Because as they continue to explore, Newcrest has elected not to take up its additional 5%, but as they explore, given the progress so far, it's very likely that more will be discovered, and that number could increase yet again. So we have all this. There are a range of other assets too, and of course, close to Havieran, they have the Canning and Paterson South assets, and of course, Paterson provinces also being explored by other companies. We've spoken about First Development Resources, which is an upcoming IPO, and of course, that's part owned by Power Metal Resources. They also have the a Jury joint venture with Newcrest, which is the Jury asset, and the Scallywag asset, which is adjacent to Havieron, where they've conducted an aeromag survey and identified underground conductors. So very exciting. Of course, you know, Havieron, as I say, is now the stuff of legend. It was the winner of the 2021 Commodity Discovery Award. And certainly going forward, you know, I think Sean Day and the management team that they have there, they've expanded the board earlier this year. They got Christopher Toonen as chief exec, Otto Richter as group money engineer, Paul Hallam as a non-exec. So they've got a huge team on board now to really maximize the opportunity this asset gives them. And as we've seen, I mean, we've seen with other companies when they make discoveries, share prices move. I mean, we spoke about Power Metal a few weeks ago, and of course, they tapped into the Malopo Farms asset last week and found a huge conductor, drilled into the edge of it, and got a big big nickel result from that. So they're sitting on a huge asset there. And the share price jumped from 0.9p. I think it hit a high of 1.7p late last week. So again, it just shows, you know, when the moves come, they really do come, and the price can snap to a new high within days, if not hours. And certainly, I think where Greatland is now, it offers a good solid opportunity. If there's any increase in the Havieron MRE, then I'm sure Sean Day and his enlarged management team will be cock-a-hoop.
So just one point here, Alan. When we're looking at that, going back to the Newcrest declining to take the additional 5% for, I can see, 85 million. Do you think where the share price of Greatland Gold is had quite a significant impact in that thinking? Because, you know, if you look at Greatland Gold, it has a 30% ownership of Havieron. So if you multiply that 5% across 30%, and you know that the 5% being worth 85 million, and then you look at, you know, their current market cap, you know, they're not far off being able to buy out Greatland Gold's entire company and get the 30% back on the deal for not too far off, you know, what they were looking at or potentially paying at the 5%. I mean, how much is that playing into it? I mean, if, for example, Greatland Gold was at 20p, do you think Newcrest would have been snapping this up? Or do you think to some extent they're biding their time to maybe see if their shares drift a little bit more?
I think that's what they're doing. And I think there's always, that's the other thing, of course, we didn't really touch on. There's, given where Greatland is now, there, and this often happens, you know, a company decides to move in a different direction, or maybe with the other assets I mentioned, they Greatland might see that they can develop another asset, so they may get a really good offer from another company to buy Havieron at the stage of evolution it is now. So there's always that possibility. So I think. Yeah, you could well be right. Maybe that is the thinking of the management team at Newcrest. They may be looking at Havieron and saying, well, we'll refuse to buy it at that price, even though it's a good price. We'll refuse to buy it, see what it does to the shares. Then maybe we can pick up the entire company on the cheap. But I think you'll find Sean Day and the new management team have different ideas on that. And, you know, all the time the asset keeps on growing, keeps on developing, then you're adding value. And if there's a consequential upswing in the gold price, or if there's an upswing in the gold price, then of course it will drive the Greatland price higher. But certainly it's worth holding for all those reasons, and of course the fact that that stake could be up for sale. The company could be up for sale. There's all of that, all of those possibilities are rolled into one there.
Yeah, certainly going to be a fascinating story to watch unfold going forward. So just a recap there of the stocks we discussed today. First up was Cineworld with the ticker of CINE. It was then Tech Capital with a ticker of TEK. And we finished off there with Greatland Gold, which had a ticker of GGP. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
And thank you very much to everybody for listening. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.